You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 67. So, got quite a lot of stuff to go through for this particular week, so I won't waste too much time on the introduction. Got the usual theme, tech news, an app review, which is actually Android only, and then I'll have a TV show review and a film review for this week, most notably Halloween themed or related to Halloween or in the spirit of Halloween, and then I'll have a Star Wars profile and of course round it out with a You Can Relax segment. So with that, I'll jump right into it. So for this week, the theme is loss carry forward. So what this is that it's an accounting technique that applies your current year's net operating losses into future year's profits to reduce those future years' liabilities and accurately track your profits. So basically, in short terms, let's say you take a loss in your current or your most recent business year, whether it's calendar year or fiscal year, and you are unable to pay it, but you want to, and it's a legitimate loss, then you can use that technique to carry those losses forward. Again, and it's offset your profits, so not only are you reducing your profits and paying off those losses, but your taxes are also reduced at the same time because you're only paying taxes on your net profits. So it's a dual benefit so that you can accurately not only pay off your losses and not and reduce that impact all at once. So whether it's $100 or $1 million, you can allocate it over a period of time. And your taxes are also adequately offset because you're only paying taxes for what your net profits are in future years. GAAP currently allows for a carry forward for up to 7 years, but it can be increased for up to a number of years by various factors like the type of loss you're carrying forward, the entities involved, and things like that. The IRS can allow carrying those losses forward for up to 20 years, so you do get a good amount of time depending, like I said, on the varying factors, but you of course need to have those backups and actually make those offsetting entries to properly show that you are reflecting those losses and offsetting them against your profits. So with that being said, I'll jump right into this week's tech news. So to start it off, Android Pay got newer deals with Visa and MasterCard for easier digital payments. So if you have one of those two cards, then it'll be more easier to pay with your digital wallet. Xiaomi announced a new phone this week called the Mi Note 2. It's a 5.7-inch dual curved screen device with a 2.35GHz Snapdragon 821 processor, 4 gigs of RAM with 64GB of storage, or 6 gigs of RAM with 128GB of storage. As a 22.5MP rear camera with 4K video recording, 8MP front camera, and a 4070mAh battery, and it's kind of angled at the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 alternative based on the size and specs. So if it interests you, look out for that. At the moment, I think it's only going to be available in China, so I don't know about global release just yet. So if it's a device that you're interested in, then look out for a global rollout. Google Cast has officially been renamed to Google Home and now adds a watch tab for trending videos and easier device management, so it's easier to connect your device to your Chromecast. Google Allo got an update to version 2.0. It adds quick replies and split screen support. So the split screen support is of course an Android Nougat feature, and then quick replies is in your notifications. Batman the Telltale series got released for Android this week. This starting off with Chapter 1, so look out for that if it interests you. My device isn't currently supported, so I've saved it for later checking out in case it does become compatible or I get a new phone and it works on that one to play the game. And finally, If This Then That now supports Google Assistant, so you can now automate different tasks and things like that using If This and That and Google Assistant. In other Chinese news, though, Amazon Prime has now launched it there, so you can now get your deliveries and Prime service there as well. There's a current promotional rate going on, so it's a little bit lower for the annual fee, but if you are interested in it, it's now available. Google Allo, or another Google Allo news as well, they now have a sticker pack for Stranger Things. So if you watch the show and you want to have their show your support with their the stickers, and check that out. And now, finally, a systemless root has been achieved on the Google Pixel by the developer Chainfire. So it's currently still in testing for a more widespread release, but he was able to get the early functionality of the systemless root. So definitely, it's definitely worth checking out. But that's all there is for that. So with that, I will jump into this week's app review. And in this case, it is a live wallpaper slash widget creator called Custom Live Wallpaper Maker, or abbreviated KWLP. So what this does is allows you to create what you would normally create in a widget, but as a live wallpaper. And so it's still interactive. You can still launch apps and have various hotspots and things like that. But it has more dynamic views and more functionality than you would see in similar apps like Zooper Widget. So in short, like I said, you create a custom live wallpaper, and you can add animations and designs and things like that based on your own creations. If you do buy, or it's available for free and in a pro version, so if you get the pro version, you can also import live wallpapers from other users. So if you see something you like, you can import it and use it as your own live wallpaper. But in the free version, you can only create and save your current iteration of what you want to do. You can do things, so if you've used Zooper Widget in the past, you're going to get similar functionality here. So if you want to create your own weather forecast or system statistical information, then you can do things like that and have that set up. Or if you want images and hotspots based on those images and create a custom look and feel that way, then it's all available here as well. I kind of like the UI and the setup process, the what you see is what you get editor here, because the live wallpaper is set up to fit your screen, so it's easier to see where everything lays out and formats and all of that. And it's easier to move items around and see exactly where they're going to lay. So if something's going to, if one of your layers is going to overlay with another thing, you can easily see that and move it out of the way. You see where your the simulated screen edges are, so you know that exactly where things might start falling off the screen, or if you want to have things hidden away off screen, then you can do that as well. It also has support for RSS feeds, so if you want to create your own live wallpaper with RSS info, like new feed information, or let's say new podcast information, or news, or things like that on your home screen, then you can do that as well. So that's pretty much the bulk of it. So I'll have a link in the show notes to the YouTube review that I did, so you can check it out in a more visual format. I set up a battery circle meter, so I can easily see where my battery's at, and then a current forecast of what the current weather conditions are like, the date, and then also a weather forecast for the upcoming 3 days, so I can see what the weather is going to be like as well. And then since then, I've also saved the hotspot so that when I click on the current weather information, it does a forced refresh of the weather. So if I haven't seen an update lately, or I want to get the latest weather, then I can just touch that current weather condition and it'll refresh. I have also, actually that's the only real change I've made otherwise, but I am looking into doing a better setup with, an RSS feed, so I can maybe do something with podcasts or get, breaking news alerts on my home screen or something like that. So something I need to read into, but I, did an early review so you can kind of see the basics, playing around with, layers, adding fade transition, so when my screen unlocks, then it fades in certain elements of the live wallpaper, so it's a pretty cool effect there. So overall, it's worth checking out, even if you just buy the free version, but I am saving up to buy the pro version so I can play around with what other people do and get some of the other features that are available in the pro version. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's entertainment news. Not too much here. The only thing of note is that Donald Glover was cast as the young Lando Calrissian in the upcoming speculated in-progress Han Solo movie, so look out for that, or look if you're interested in his acting work, then he is currently set as Lando Calrissian. As far as what I watched for the week, I had a chance to watch the original and reborn versions of MacGyver Season 1, Episode 5, so for the original version, it was the heist. In the new version, it is Toothpick. I also had a chance to watch Star Wars Rebels Season 3, Episode 6, The Last Battle, so we get to see Clone Trooper Rex face off against a droid commander, so pretty good throwback to the Clone Wars there. I also had a chance to watch Gotham Season 3, Episode 6, Follow the White Rabbit, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4, Episode 5, Lockup. So overall, the episodes I watched them, but they're kind of carryover episodes. In Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it was more work with Quake and Ghost Rider and having them stay on the team and focus on the mission. So we still have that team up and as far as looking for the book. Gotham, for Follow the White Rabbit, it's still a lot on the Mad Hatter versus Jim Gordon, and then Penguin and Riddler. So pretty much straightforward stuff there. So with that, I'll jump into this week's TV show review. So the TV episode I had a chance to watch this week was The Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 1, The Day Will Come When You Won't Be. So I will say off the top here that I will be spoiling the episode as far as what was on, so I don't really have to jump around the review topic. So if you're if you still haven't seen it or you don't want to be spoiled, you can jump ahead to the film review if you want. The film review will be the 2016 version of Ghostbusters, and if you don't want to be spoiled on that, then the Star Wars profile will be Mace Windu, so forward a few minutes and jump to that. So with that, I'll jump into the review for The Walking Dead. So it released or aired on in the United States on October 23rd, 2016. A summary of the episode is that Rick and his group, Neil, helps sleep before Negan and his group. What Negan does will forever haunt those who survive. So overall, it was a very good season premiere. I'm glad they resolved what happened at the end of season 6. So I know there was a lot of commotion as to being left in the dark and having that cliffhanger of who dies, but they pulled it off really well. So I don't know if maybe because of fan blowback that they did it in the first episode. But I agree, I wouldn't have wanted them to hold it off too long, and it's a good way to start the episode or start the season, and I'm glad they did it, or they did it in a way that I rather enjoyed. I mean, it was good, it was well produced. It kind of bummed me out as far as who died. So with that, I'll jump right into it. So we start off with, or my first point of thought was that maybe Rick was trying to see how far Negan would go to see what pushes his button. So it was a good speech and performance by Rick, as far as not today, not tomorrow, but someday he's going to kill Negan. So, to me, it wasn't that it was done too early in the episode or before we even know who died, but to me, it seemed like, even though it was mostly, it seemed in shock of what just happened, it looked like it was in the early points of Rick basically pissed off at what happened and already formulating how he was going to get back at Negan. So what he needed to do to avenge the deaths of his friends. As far as the Negan performance, I actually thought it was a really, really good performance. He portrayed, I mean, I haven't read the comics, so I can't compare it to that, but he did portray that. He portrayed a governor better than the governor himself was portrayed. So if we had seen a Negan performance early on and it was this level of performance, then it would have been a very much better plot line and a much more worthy adversary. So basically you have kind of good Rick against evil Rick, or good Negan versus bad Negan. Of course, we don't know the backstory of Negan himself, or I don't know. Maybe I don't know if it's been revealed in the comics, but we now see kind of brothers on opposite side of the war kind of thing. So I kind of see where they want to go with it and how they go about with Rick versus Negan. As far as the deaths go, Abraham was the logical first choice because he could most easily take Negan out. So there were actually two deaths in this episode. Losing Abraham was definitely a big loss to our Rick group because he was strong enough. Daryl is actually a good... would have been an interesting other choice as well, but since he was feisty and angered at the loss of Abraham, we have him in a different story arc. So the only other person in this group that is that could just handle business and be done with it would have been Abraham. So as far as what I saw in the episode, or as far as the choices go, I want to say that's why Negan chose Abraham. And it was an interesting way to pull around this into the loss of Glenn. So with Daryl's outburst and Negan following the rules, this was actually the part of the episode that showed me how Negan would be a better governor, because he said he would allow one outburst, and after that he had to basically show them who's the boss, basically, and he actually followed through. And throughout the course of the episode, we see how he's going to maintain his dominion and dominance over Rick and the group. And finally, Rick having to cut off Carl's hand to show his understanding was disconcerting and a weird way to preclude Rick losing his hand. So I did, much like the Glenn thing, I did look ahead to see that, to learn more about the hand business. And I guess in the comics, Rick loses his hand. So I kind of see here that this is going to be one of those events that, while they are not going to show Rick cutting off his son's hand or even a kid losing his hand, it's an interesting way to show that maybe early on Rick is going to try something against Negan, and Negan is going to punish Rick and say, remember, you told me to take your hand, so here I am taking your hand, so that kind of thing. So overall, the episode was very jam-packed. It was very emotional. It was a definite loss, or it was a hard loss to lose Glenn, especially since we've had him since season one, and I think even since episode one. I'm going to actually rewatch that episode to refresh my memory. I want to say see episode one, maybe two, but since we've had him since the beginning, it's a definite loss. And a side joke for me as far as Abraham is that maybe they were running out of one-liners for him, so they wanted to, and since his death would be impactful in the new group, that is why they got him out. But I did like that he did have his one last basic outburst against Negan for being the choice at who would die. So overall, a good episode. I did like it, so I can't wait to see where they go with the rest of the season and who King Ezekiel is as well from the trailer. So I'll probably read up on that just to get a idea of who he is and where how the comics introduced him. So that's all there is for that. So with that, earlier in the week, I was actually only gonna do the TV show review for The Walking Dead, but I got a coupon for a movie review or a movie rental from Google Play, and I was looking at some of the new movie releases, and the 2016 Ghostbusters showed up. So I figured, you know what, I'll watch it, and if I finish watching it by the end of the week, then I'll release it for this per episode. So I will say that I did finish watching it, and I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. So I'll do a review here. So the movie itself released in the United States on July 15th, 2016, has a runtime of 116 minutes. I think it was like 122, 123 minutes, something like that for the extended edition. A summary of the movie is that following a ghost invasion of Manhattan, paranormal enthusiasts Aaron Gilbert and Abby Yates, nuclear engineer Jillian Holtzman, and subway worker Patty Tolan band together to stop the otherworldly threat. So the movie itself got an IMDb rating of 54% with a Rotten Tomatoes score of 72% by the critics and 56% by the audience. So overall, the audience thought it was hit or miss, basically even as far as those who liked it and those who didn't. As far as my personal enjoyment of the movie, I thought it would go, or it was more or closer to the critics, right around that 75% mark. It was pretty good. It was I enjoyed it overall. It was pretty good. It was as much enjoyment, I thought, as the original Ghostbusters movie, except just the female cast, which I actually had no issue with. It was all of them did really, really well. Even though bringing in some of the original cast, which I'll get to in a little bit, that was actually also done very well. So overall, they knew exactly what they were going to be facing when they released this movie, and they knocked it out of the park. So with that, I'll jump into my reviews. So my favorite two Ghostbusters were Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones. Kate McKinnon was the one who created all the equipment, the proton packs and the ghost-busting bombs and all of that good stuff. I just enjoyed her overall vibe. She was having fun with it. she had her and her reaction shots to everything were good. Her weird dance sequence in the middle of the thing was like spur of the moment and fun and sporadic. And then even at the end when they were doing the final battle and her with the laser whip / barbed wire kind of thing, whatever, those, that whole scene was fun, so I enjoyed that. Leslie Jones, overall, she was just generally fun throughout the movie, so even though I knew there were points from the trailer that would be in the movie, I wasn't really sitting there waiting for those to show when they happened. I was like, oh, I remember that from the trailer. So she was just fun, spunky, that whole basically that whole Ernie Hudson vibe that we had from the original movie, and even mixed with Bill Murray, just she brought that, and I enjoyed it, and I would, I'm glad they had as much of her in this as she did. And then the other two Ghostbusters, the other two ladies were good as well, but they were kind of the serious ones, so the Dan Aykroyd and Peter Venkman of this version. But I don't know, just the off points of them, like, it was, sometimes they were pulling it off, sometimes they weren't, so I don't know, to me it could have, maybe just the feeling of the other two were good enough where I pulled it off, but that's kind of where it was lost for me, even though what they were doing as being prior friends and all of that, that whole storyline was actually really good, but there were points where I didn't enjoy as much as I could have. Otherwise, though, the cameos by the original cast members who are still alive, of course, we lost the Harold Ramis, so that kind of sucked. But I guess reading the trivia, they had a bust of his head in one of the scenes, so it worked out. But Bill Murray, Annie Potts, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, and Sigourney Weaver, I just liked their overall placement through the movie. It wasn't too much. They didn't rely on the original cast. They brought them in, they went out, and that was it. So I'm glad that they were not used as part of the overall movie, so I actually enjoyed it, and especially Dan Aykroyd going basically having the line that he doesn't believe in ghosts, and then Bill Murray being the skeptic like he was in the first movie, so it worked out. Ernie Hudson was good as far as being Leslie Jones's uncle, and then Sigourney Weaver being Kate McKinnon's former or basic mentor. And then in this movie, my only real question was, when did Slimer become so evil? I remember he was kind of, not really, like, I want to say he was evil in the original movie, but more of a troublemaker than actual evil. So in this one, I guess in retrospect, he was more a troublemaker here, but he seemed more aggressive in this version than the original one. So I might have to go back and see how it was there, but I'm glad they brought him in here, and he's just as hungry, and he's driving around causing trouble. And finally, I like that they brought back the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man as a balloon rather than a giant candy treat, and have him morph into the villain. So, I kind of like that they made references to the original one, but they didn't they didn't make an official remake. They made just more passing references and made this its own movie, and it was kind of weird. It turned kind of into a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, but Ghostbusters. But overall, I enjoyed it. It was fun. It didn't seem like 2 hours. The 2 hours went by really, really fast. So for me, overall, it was worth it. So I may, I don't know if I'll buy it, but I may re-rent it if I get another credit or something and watch it again later. But overall, it is worth seeing. I do recommend it. It's if you haven't seen, or if you're my age, then you will have already seen the original one, but even if you ignore the Ghostbusters 1 and 2, then watching this one is a good movie, is worth watching, and it's just really, really fun and a good time. So I definitely recommend it. If I were to give it a final grade, I'd give it between a 75 to 80%. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's Star Wars profile. So for this week, as a follow-up to last week's episode, I wanted to talk about Mace Windu. He's a Jedi Master during the time of the Old Republic, and most notably the waning years of the Old Republic. He was a human male who stood 6.3 feet tall, so taller than most Jedi. He was born on the planet of Harun Kal. And he was born 50 years prior to the Clone War, so he was actually getting up there in age. But his most notable, or not really notable achievement, but he was known in the Jedi ranks as being the youngest Jedi to, or youngest Force user to become a Jedi, which often put him at odds as far as Anakin Skywalker wanting to be a Jedi Master as well and not achieving that ring. So his job, as we know, is a Jedi Master. He is known for his generally strict adherence to the Jedi principles. So any variation, deviation, put him at odds with other Jedi. Over the years, he did learn how to not necessarily bend the rules, but extend them a little bit and move the, or kind of fudge the gray areas a little bit as far as the border between the strict adherence and not so strict adherence. But he was generally conformist and one to follow the rules. He preferred the role of as a peacekeeper without fighting to help others rather than the generals that the Jedi became. So he was one of those people generally against the Clone Wars, but because he was called into service and he had, was needed to help the galaxy, he was one to not say no. His most notable achievement was that he achieved mastery of Form 7, otherwise known as Vapad. This was a very notable achievement because it's the most aggressive and unpredictable of the lightsaber forms. It was traditionally used by dark side users because it tapped into aggression, hate, fear, and the various traits that one would normally associate with the dark side of the Force. He was able to master the form without falling to the dark side's corrupting influence and turn it back on to other users. So he was able to keep himself in balance in order to maintain his Jedi ways and the light side of the Force. In practical applications, he successfully used it against Mother Talzin and Darth Sidious by... So basically, one who achieves mastery in this lightsaber technique is able to not only... use it themselves to keep themselves balanced and on the light side of the Force, but eventually also redirect it against whoever they're using it against. So if they are using it against a dark side user, if the dark side user is particularly strong in the dark side, like Emperor Palpatine, then it's going to be used back against them at to that same level. So it's like basically it's like fighting themselves. So if they're weak-willed or still strong, then the impact will vary on all of that. A bit of fun fact, though, this is a little bit more of outside the movies rather than within the movies, but Samuel L. Jackson requested that he get a purple lightsaber to help him find himself in the Battle of Geonosis, and he wanted a lightsaber that was a different color so that he could say that he is the second most powerful Jedi after Master Yoda. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into a quick You Can Relax segment. So this is more for United States listeners, but this week I wanted to talk about easily registering to vote. So if the registration deadline, I believe, has already passed, but getting instructions on registering and overall registering as well is actually really easy. So if you do a Google search for register to vote, you get a knowledge graph based on your location, assuming that is the state that you live in. You can easily get instructions by state for registering, and you can easily change the drop-down menu to whatever state you need to get instructions for. So let's say you are planning to move to another state in the coming year, then you can easily get those instructions. So when you move, you know exactly what you need to do and register for that state, and then easily get information about registering to whichever party you want to register yourself as if you do claim a party. You also get to look at the 2016 ballot, so you can see all the different people who are running on the various parties. So we do know right now who is a Republican and Democrat. And then you can also learn about who's in the Libertarian Party, Green Party, and whatever other parties there are, so you know exactly who is running where. I know that there's Gary Johnson and I forget the lady's name in the Green and Libertarian Party. I forget exactly which parties they are for which, but... doing a search for register to vote will give you all of that information. So Google is making it very, very easy to get all that information. And then also, as the votes start coming in, learning what level or how many votes each candidate is getting. So that's all there is for this particular episode. So if you have any questions, comments, want to get in touch with me or anything like that, You can email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can find me on Twitter at PatelN01. You can get links to subscribe all prior episodes and all of that good stuff at PatelN01.com. Of course, you can find us directly in iTunes and Google Play Music, where you can, if you like the episodes, you can give us a 5-star rating or a thumbs up. We're also on SoundCloud, Stitcher. You can subscribe by RSS. Do a search in Pocket Cast if you use Pocket Cast. So we are everywhere. Screencasts and all app reviews and all of that can be found on YouTube at youtube.com/PatelN01. And of course, if you like this podcast and want to find more shows and podcasts, you can find us on the Geek.io network at geek-io.net. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for listening, and until next time.